And in light of that, may I ask for nominations from the floor for acting chairperson in terms of Rule 130? Honourable Maluleke?
Thank you. I want to nominate Christina Mohale, Honourable Christina Mohale, to be the chairperson of the committee today, the acting chair.
Thank you, Honourable Maluleke. Are there any seconders for Honourable Mohale's nomination? Honourable Williams, Honourable Suka, and Honourable Boshiho, duly noted. Honourable Mohale?
Thank you, everyone, for the trust that you have in me. I hope it's not going to be a coup d'etat. First, we've got our agenda. We've got our agenda. we've done the election of an acting chairperson, and we are now at opening and welcome. Do we have any apologies? We've got an apology from the Minister, Honorable Sosibo, and our chairperson, whose husband is admitted at the hospital. And thank you. And I would like to welcome everybody. This is our first meeting after the recess that we had. Last week's meeting, we could not correct. This is our first meeting. And also to welcome each and every one of you. And today we'll be dealing with the report from the Public Service Commission. We would like to say we hope that the working relationship that we had last year, we will continue with that even this year, and appreciating all the reports that they give us, because they do give us direction to where we are leading. And today's report is about the state of the public service. And I'm now going to hand over to the person who will be leading to them to introduce them and also continue with giving us the report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Acting Chairperson, Honourable Member Mohale. Thank you very much for the warm welcome. I just want to start by registering our wishes for the chairperson who we just learned is in hospital. We wish her, as the PSC family, a speedy recovery.
The husband.
Oh, did you say the husband? I thought you said the... Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said... My apologies. But the wishes are the same. I mean, it's important for us to register there. And also, I want to... I want to mention that the last chairperson, Dr. Mbijima, retired at the end of February. But as the Public Service Commission, we want members to be assured
of our commitment to continuing the relationship that we have had over the years with the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration. And having said that, I will introduce the commissioner who has come with us, and then I will hand over to the Director General to introduce the office component of the delegation. Perhaps for some members, Commissioner Mamaroba Malahlela needs no introduction. He has walked the corridors of Parliament, but he is a commissioner of the Public Service Commission based in Pretoria, and he is also the convener of the M&E Monitoring and Evaluation Specialist Team, which is the production room, actually, for the State of the Public Service report.
Thank you. Deputy Chairperson of the Public Service Commission, Acting Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Mohale, Honorable Members. From the office side, Office of the Public Service Commission, we are accompanied by Mr. Indra Naidu, who is the Deputy Director General responsible for monitoring and evaluation. He will be doing the presentation, but we also have Mr. Justice Quaidi, Public Service Commission support side, as well as Ms. Nokto Gwaza, who is our parliamentary officer in the Public Service Commission. And Mr. Naidu, the Deputy Director General of M&E, will lead in the presentation. Thank you. Thank you, Acting Chairperson, Honourable Members. I'll take you through a set of slides which captures the essence of the State of the Public Service Report 2010. As you know, the PSC annually publishes this report, the State of the Public Service Report, and it's organized according to the 9 values in Section 195 of the Constitution. Now, the theme for 2010 was integration, coordination, and effective public service delivery. The need for coordination stems from the fact that societal problems have multiple causes and thus need a multifaceted and coherent approach to solve. In other words, several departments contribute to the same outcome. South Africa has now embarked on a path to promote outcomes-driven public administration, and this approach inherently requires more coordination and collaboration around the achievement of defined outcomes. Now, the 9 principles prove useful to throw light on different aspects of a fairly complex concept. As far as professional ethics go, the first principle, we note that corruption is a challenge that knows no boundaries and should be addressed in a coordinated manner by all sectors of society. Structures like the NACF, the ACCC, Anti-Corruption Interministerial Committee, and Anti-Corruption Fora at provincial level have been established to promote and coordinate the coordination of anti-corruption efforts. Important work has been done under the auspices of these structures. The ACC has completed an audit of minimum anti-corruption capability in departments and established an anti-corruption learning network which will help to integrate and coordinate anti-corruption efforts. The NACF has managed to bring together a cross-section of stakeholders to focus on a common set of priorities. Whilst it remains an important multi-sector anti-corruption body, the NACF has also not been able to function optimally. However, during 2010, there has been renewed efforts and commitment to strengthen this. However, effective coordination remains a challenge. The ACC has not been able to achieve its objectives of coordinating measures to build minimum anti-corruption capacity in departments. Such capacity is necessary for addressing challenges of corruption referred to them. This is reflected in the low feedback rate by departments on cases from the NACH referred to them, which stands at a concerning 36%. Centralized capacity needs to be created. The Minister for Public Service and Administration has moved in this direction and created an anti-corruption unit. A key challenge in addressing corruption is that due to the lack of coordination of data on implicated officials, many resign before disciplinary hearing and accept appointments in other departments. With regards to financial disclosures, the compliance rate has improved. It was 62% in the 4-5 financial year to 79% in 8-9 financial year. Scrutiny of a sample of forms through a partnering with CIPRO and working with the Dean's Office, has revealed non-disclosures, pointing to the benefit of working in a coordinated manner. The second principle, effectiveness, efficiency, and economy, coordinating the efforts of departments, spheres of government, and other institutions to achieve outcomes is key. Government has put in place clear planning frameworks that enhance coordination. These include the MTSF, the National Spatial Development Perspective, the Provincial Growth and Development Strategies, and Local Integrated Development Plans. These will now be further bolstered by integrated planning around outcomes. The planning frameworks are complemented by new coordination mechanisms, such as delivery agreements and delivery forums. Coordination requires mature institutional capacity. The spending capacity of provinces has improved substantially. The provinces as a group overspend the budget by 1.6% in the 8-9 financial year. This is a turnaround from underspending of 1.7%, 1.1% and 1.1% in the foregoing three financial years. However, in building a mature institutional capacity, the following lessons from the experience of the past few years should be taken into account. Firstly, planning is still largely restricted to the mandates of functionally organized departments and is not done holistically around outcomes. DG clusters were not effective coordination mechanisms. Participation rate of director generals in cluster meetings was 32%. The clusters and the new delivery forums should become fora for joint planning and agreement on causes of action, including budget realignment. The assignment of different parts of the service delivery process also creates intergovernmental coordination challenges. For example, the housing process involves land acquisition, township establishment, infrastructure provision, and the building of houses. Now, parts of the process are the responsibility of provincial departments and the others of municipalities. Different parts of the process are financed through different grant mechanisms. Development orientation. Promoting lasting development requires multiple, targeted, and effectively coordinated interventions. Some interventions have worked well, but others not. Recipients of social grants has increased from 4 million people in 2001-2 to 13 million in 2008-9 and will increase to 16 million in 2013. Access to water has increased from 62% in 96 to 88% in 2007. The expanded public works program was implemented across departmental boundaries and created 613,498 job opportunities in the 9-10 financial year. South Africa's response to the global financial crisis, during which 1 million jobs were lost, included the admirable step of coordinating with business, organized labor, and civil society on a package of measures to be implemented. Departments' development interventions are also increasingly aligned with local integrated development plans. Employment creation remains a challenge. The year-on-year loss of jobs from the first quarter in 2009 to the first quarter in 2010 was 833,000 jobs. 40% of people still live below the poverty line. Some valuable lessons from recent experiences will certainly help that interventions, such as the few foregoing examples, are implemented in a more integrated fashion. The provision of quality education required an integrated approach involving safety and security for safer schools, health, nutrition, immunization, and parental involvement, amongst others. With regards to health, with TB, HIV, co-infection becoming a growing threat, an integrated approach is required that pulls together TB and HIV AIDS programs. Consequently, the Minister of Health announced the adoption of the new policy on HIV AIDS and TB, whereby the two conditions are regarded as one disease, and HIV and AIDS and TB treatment facilities are integrated. Fairness. Fairness and equity needs to be experienced evenly by citizens, irrespective of their geographic location, which requires effective coordination so that norms and standards are evenly applied. Good practice in one part of the system can be undone by failures in another part, and it is critical that collective action be promoted between stake organs, business and civil society. Poor coordination has in certain instances compromised efforts to redress past inequalities. An example is housing, where despite the criteria of a first-come, first-served basis, it is not applied in practice, leading to a perception of unfairness. The administrative responsibility to apply such criteria rests with municipalities, which given their challenge and the risk of corruption, may not result in a transparent and fair application. The Promotion of Administrative Justice Act provides standards of fairness in decisions affecting the rights of people, but departments' compliance with the Act shows a marginal improvement to 57% in the 8-9 cycle. PASA does serve to instill a common standard across departments. The principle of equity requires that citizens can expect the same minimum service standards across the country, which have been set by national departments. However, due to resource and performance differences, levels of service sometimes differ. Better coordination is required to address the perceptions of bias and lack of fairness, as there remains a risk that norms are applied differently. An example is road maintenance, where expenditure ranges between 9 and 32% of expenditure. The National Department of Transport needs to monitor and ensure that standards are met. Public participation in policy making and responsiveness to needs. There are several initiatives that seek to maintain an effective link between citizens and communities, and these would be more successful if there is improved cooperation between the institutions involved. Citizens have expressed disquiet about services received and do not distinguish between levels of government. Hence, the need for coordination and integration between all levels is required. It is important to sustain meaningful channels of public participation, with an emphasis on government facilitating participation with communities encouraged to take charge of their own development. Ward committees should serve as a key public participation mechanism and support integrated development planning and municipal performance management. In practice, however, they are said to be ineffective. The presidential hotline serves as another communication channel between government and citizens. However, the timely provision of feedback to callers requires attention, as noted by the president. The role of CDWs was perceived quite positively by government officials and ward councillors. A challenge is providing an appropriate institutional environment to support them. Another approach to community participation is through programs such as the Comprehensive Rural Development Program, which uses profiling methods to supporting participatory processes. CDWs are spread between a number of departments and form a link between communities, providing expertise to ensure coordinated, responsive, and accessible government. To some service centers have increased access to services, but only to those living close to such centers. A PhD study found important drivers for citizen satisfaction are accessibility, followed by courtesy and timeliness. Inspections conducted by the PhD of clinics found a general compliance with Bartapela principles, while the PhD survey of this principle found performance improved from 35% in 5-6, which was rated as poor, to 54% in the 8-9, which was rated as adequate. Accountability. The outcomes approach of the presidency has a sharpened focus on responsibilities, but requires much coordination between the different levels, that is, ministers, departments, implementing agencies, who are responsible for an outcome. The creation of the Ministry for Performance Monitoring and Evaluation reflects the premium placed on promoting accountable governance. Government is faced with the challenge of how to promote individual and collective accountability so that the 12 outcomes can be achieved. The introduction of the performance management system for the executive, which will be cascaded to other levels, is a step in the right direction. Lessons learned from performance management of senior managers may be useful in this regard. Parliament should consider how it will hold government accountable for outcomes, which cross the boundaries of the scope of work of the portfolio committees. The filing of performance agreements and holding of HOD evaluations is a key accountability issue. However, in 2009-10, only 65% of HODs filed their PAs with the PSC by the 31st March 2010. And by 31 March 2010, only 51% of qualifying HODs have been evaluated for their performance in the 2007-08 financial year. The audit outcomes reflect financial accountability, and it was found that 43 departments, that is 12 national and 31 provincial, received qualified audit opinions in 8-9. In 8-9, only 111 of the 283 municipalities received an unqualified audit opinion. Transparency. The management of information on the attainment of outcomes is critical to ensure its coherence and consistency, so that different departments and entities do not report potentially contradictory things about the same outcome. Joint work between departments will require greater access to information, and sharing shall be needed. Challenges remain to access, especially when some departments restrict and others provide information, and this needs to be addressed. In light of the outcomes approach, the permeability of boundaries on information held by different role players is likely to be tested. The PSC tests this principle by assessing the quality of annual reports and department compliance with prior indicators. The performance overall at 56% in the 8-9 period shows that information is still not available timeously and in an accessible manner. The South African Human Rights Commission found that for the 8-9 financial year, as many as 10 national and 71 provincial departments did not submit the annual reports. The current process for citizens to access information when turned down, is too costly and complex. Proper record management requires attention, and there is a need for improved coordination between information officers and record managers. Progress is being made with the integration of information systems in the form of the Integrated Financial Management System, which will integrate the current disparate human resource management, payroll, accounting, logistical, and business intelligence systems. The quality of information contained in the annual report has improved. It should be noted that reporting now needs to be elevated to cross-cutting outcomes, as opposed to departmental outputs requiring greater coherence. HR practices. Effective coordination of service delivery relies on the role played by public officials. The achievement of the 12 outcomes depends on the caliber of the public officials, the ability, readiness, and commitment to the task. They need to think outside functional silos. Rigorous and credible HR practices are essential to ensure that public servants who are committed to serve are acknowledged, and those who are not are dealt with to improve or exit. The critical HRM practices requiring attention are HR planning, skills development, recruitment and selection, and performance management. A PSC survey showed that the average score of departments is 47% for recruitment and selection practices and 44% for skills development. The DPSA developed and published an HR planning strategic framework for the public service, which it has monitored and found poor capacity to perform modeling, forecasting, and scenario planning. For the outcomes approach to be credible, there must be a willingness to work in concert rather than competition with each other, and recognition that one works for the public service, not just a department. Representativity. Achieving the objective of a representative public service, an integrated approach is necessary. Otherwise, the private and public sector would just poach from each other. The public service has exceeded the representativity target for black people at senior management level, but lags behind with regard to women representativity at senior management level and the representativity of people with disabilities in the public service. However, with regard to women, it should be recognized that considerable progress has been made, with the first target of 30% having been met. The revised target of 50% by 2009 must now be achieved. Some departments have achieved the women target. Economic Affairs, Environment and Tourism, Eastern Cape, Community Safety, Gauteng, Social Development, Mpumalanga, Social Development, Northwest. DPSA has launched a job access strategy for people with disability, but it is too early to assess the success of the strategy. Whilst black people are 79% of the SMS in the public service in 2009, the percentage for the private sector is 28.5%. Competition for highly skilled black candidates will become more intense. In this regard, the public service's policy and procedure on revolving door enablers should facilitate sound partnership with the private sector to ensure better utilization of senior managers. An assessment by the SSRC argued that slow progress with representativity is often due to real constraints, such as the absence of skills in some areas and the uneven quality of school leavers and graduates. Human resource planning, human resource development, employment equity planning are not aligned. There is not enough information on the number of economically active disabled people, raising some doubts on the correctness of the set target. As part of the MDGs, South Africa has prioritized the education of the girl child, but this should be sustained well into post-secondary education, as well as workplace HRD, so as to do away with the excuse that there are not enough qualified and experienced women to be appointed in certain positions. Finally, the SOPS 2010 roundtable discussion. On November 4, we held a roundtable with various government entities and other stakeholders on the SOPS 2010 report. The report was rated positively, and much of the discussion revolved around how the PSC could implement change around the issues raised in the SOPS. The following are among the key issues raised. Participants inquired how issues raised in many reports could be taken forward and influence decisions that shape the nature and performance of the public service. It was emphasized that the PSC should be the custodian of values in Section 195. Questions were raised about what the moral public service should look like and what can be done to achieve this. And the participants raised the view that the PSC should assist with recruitment and selection. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you, Mr. Nandu, for your presentation. And we would like to think that, yes, we have this presentation was based on the basic values of Section 195 of the Constitution. But there's something very interesting in the Constitution on section 195(2), which is saying the above principles apply to administration in every sphere of government, of which most of the time we don't get anything from the third sphere of government, I mean the local level. Because but all these all these values go up to the local government level. So, honourable members, can we talk to the presentation? Honourable Williams, Honourable Van Schalkwyk, Honourable Williams, and Honourable Van Schalkwyk. Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to thank the PSC for the input that they gave us today. I've got a few questions about, a lot of it talked about the non-compliance to all sorts of things, like the PAJA, the PAIA, there was non-compliance to all these things. And we'd like more details, in particular, the DG cluster meetings. You said that they only attended 32% of the time. So are there details available that we can get so that we can actually know which people aren't actually going to these meetings? Also, the other non-compliances within the report. You know, we actually need to know, for instance, which departments and provincial departments didn't submit annual report details. So we actually want that information so we can address this, because it's all very well getting percentages, but unless we know who we're dealing with, we can't deal with them. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to mention two things. Why should the official who face charges of financial misconduct resign and still get employed in another department to successfully evade the charges when the Public Service Amendment Act, 30 of 27, was passed solely to deal with this specific issue? Is the personal system unable to detect this anomaly? And then the second point, the summary mentions a roundtable discussion with various government entities on the state of the public service report. I want to know, have the members of the portfolio committee, have they been invited to join the roundtable discussion? And then to add to that, the state of the public service last year, the portfolio committee did not know when it was going to be made available to the public. In other words, we read in the papers about the state of the public service report. I don't think that is quite acceptable. The portfolio committee, I should reckon, should be one of the first groups to get insight into this report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Suka.
Thank you, Chairperson. First and foremost, Chairperson, I just want to ask a general question. Whether this report, is it the real comprehensive report about the state of the public service of the country, so that we deal with this matter comprehensively, or is it an executive summary taken from a particular report, so that we are clear what we are dealing with here? Because in this light, you could have a sense that there is more information, there's more in it than what is presented here. Because if we want to change the approach and the attitude of the state in terms of their public service, surely you must get a comprehensive and a detailed report as to turn around the manner in which things are done. Because I can't comprehend for instance, on your page 4, your your people who are supposed to be not paid for, but that talks of the DGs, the 32%. I can't comprehend that. Why do they not? I mean, sorry, page six that was raised by honourable member, that they are not attending, they are not participating, or their participation is at 32% rate. I am not sure whether they have the regular, is there a scheduled meeting for our DGs to meet at a particular time? Are they being regularized? Or is it impromptu meetings that are being called? That's a reflection of 32% is here. So I'm saying we need to get more on this, and what corrective measures are there? Because to talk or to make a statement is one thing, but to apply part of the PFMA requirements by the heads of department is something else, and they know the law, the consequences thereof. So I just want to check whether is it the real report that can give us guidance on what is being done. Secondly, Chairperson, because also if you look on the on page four, if your officials resign, we need to quantify that by rand and cents. To what extent, financially speaking, has that got implications to the state, and thereof any recovery for those who run away from the disciplinary committees or disciplinary meetings to be had, and what is the vacancy rate at the moment? Remember, I'm taking this from the SOPA or the State of the Nation addressed by the President, the question of the vacancies. What is the state of the vacancy rate if those people resign and run away from facing their charges? So I'm saying, because we need to have that kind of in mind. My other little concern, Chairperson, you know, I'm getting the sense that there is a gap of 2 years in the report, especially on the noted something here on their delivery, where the last report of this was received in 2007. What happened between 08, 09, 09, 010 report in this document? There's a little bit of a silence on that, because now we are in 2010. This report is around, it's about 2010. And there is a gap of 2008 to 2009 that will lead us to 2010 in terms of this reporting. So there is that gap for me. So I would want to know what happened on the silence of the other 2 years that was supposed to be reflected here, so that it reflects a true reflection. If you check on, for instance, on page 7, I'm referring to page 7, access to water has increased from 62% in 1996 to 88% in 2007. My question would be then, what about the following years, the financial years? Nowhere, has there no work been done? Is that the impression that I'm getting? Or where is that report? That's why I'm asking you whether is it a real report or is there another report? On page 10, an example is of road maintenance, where expenditure ranges between 9 and 32% of the expenditure. Surely there's a serious problem in this regard. What caused it to be so low whilst our people are clamoring for roads, especially on the rural areas? We are a bit silent on that. My other concern is the ward committees on page 11, leading to page 12. The CDWs. You see, our ward committees, I'm not sure is there an audit of our ward committees throughout the country so that we can get a clear perspective, because surely there are those ward committees that are not functional at all in certain areas. And as such, it poses a challenge, be it political or the capacity of them. So we want to understand, and we give credit to those that are working very clear, but there are those that are not up to scratch when it comes to ward committees, including the CDWs, which are doing quite a good job. Our target on the But to appeal principles, page 12 at the bottom, I can see that there is a marked improvement. You know, because I don't understand why are we not putting our targets very high, so that we force people to work and to do the right things at the right time, and so on. But our target seems to be a little bit at 50% or so. Is it because we are afraid to exercise the law? Well, surely we are talking of also here of senior people who understand their responsibilities. So I'm saying, Chairperson, I'm not sure whether this is the real report, because we want to get the details by and large. If you say to me on page 14, the two bullet points, the last and the penultimate one, on the agreement signed, you know, it says the audit outcomes on the last bullet reflect financial accounting, and it was found that 43 departments, that is 12 national and 31, received qualified audit reports. I know there is a program by COCTA at that level to have clean audit. What are we saying at this level in terms of our department? Is there a campaign of getting that? Who's leading it? Are we vigorous, really, to get that clean audit? Because there are departments that have been getting not a good report in terms of the qualification of it, especially where the AG made some emphasis in those areas that are done. My last would be on the issue of the corruption. You see, this issue of corruption relates to our systems that are not speaking to one. Well, I think our systems are not having a synergy or system. I know there's a pilot project to be introduced. It was introduced in Bloemfontein, Free State. There is a pilot of that nature and somewhere. But I think we need to move with speed, because, for example, in the Eastern Cape, there are different systems when dealing with the finances. Others are manually done. Others are with three, four different systems. And it exposes that to corruption. I'm not sure whether we have time frames to improve our systems in relation to corruption, let alone the joint task teams that are dealing with that, like the Hawks and everybody else. But I think we need to move with a little bit of speed in that regard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think this report has information. The only thing that I think is left is the recommendation from the PSC, so that how can we address these challenges? Because if you can question these questions, they are from other departments. What I think is left is the recommendation of addressing these challenges that we have in the report. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Chair. No, Chair, sorry that I came a bit late, but I just want to admit the gist of the presentation. But just want to find out on page 4 if there could be supplementary information with regard to the head of department, people resigning and shifting positions, because it seems to be a trend where when they're in the middle of the DC and then people change and they take appointment in our department, in that way they avoid dealt with appropriately. If you could give us a bit of information around that, because I think the whole debate around single public service has always been the question of trying to make sure that you manage those kind of problems. You don't have people doing some misdemeanor somewhere else and then running somewhere else in the middle of the DC. If we could get more information about that. And I could make an example that, there's a topical issue currently of the former Director General of Labour suspended, misleading Parliament with information in terms of budget. And then later, later after that suspension, he jumped over from the labor department and he goes work into communication. So you see this happening, and you see the lack of commitment in dealing with this kind of problem in officials, in state officials. So if we could get a little bit of more information there, I will be delighted so that we can make a follow-up. On the page 6, there was this issue I wanted to just to add on the Director General. I just want to ask the general question. Does the 32% of participation suggest that there is a deficiency of functioning of cluster approach in terms of the cluster? Because if the cluster is an engine room and you've got 32% of the participation, that means there is a problem with that. And if you have gone a little bit deeper into it, just to get to give us a little bit more information, or you can supplement this information in due course with other information. Perhaps the on page 10, through a quick scan, the compliance aspect of law. Now, perhaps we could also get, because it's quite a shorthand, so that we can give us a little bit of more information we say department, there's a problem with department in non-compliance. We know where the AG has reported, but some instances in terms of the full compliance with the Act, we are not necessarily having that information. If we could, there are repeat offenders or repeat department that are known to be continuously committing this error, I'll call it this error. If you could give us a bit of a pattern in terms of those departments, so we can see how we, in different portfolios, we could then in committees deal with that particular aspect more clearly. The worrying thing, Chair, which is the last point, which I think also perhaps as a committee different in this debate, we should be finding what we could put forward as a recommendation. There seems to be no consequences to the senior officials of the state who are paid huge amount of money to comply with the Act and to be able to be accountable. When you look at the page 14 and you look at the simple performance agreement, and this is a continuous cycle. It never stops. It's just a vicious cycle. It continues. If you could find a recommendation that we could recommend and make it a proper recommendation to Parliament for consequences. In fact, here there is a executing authority who's supposed to implement measures, corrective measures. Some are corrective, some are punitive. But none of the two are implemented by the executive authority. Somehow we need to, this oversight issue, we probably have to ask the question from the executing authority, because in the handbook, there's some clear steps that need to be taken for non-compliance, but they don't quite see the executing authority, that we at least as a committee are able to hear directly from the executing authority about why has not been a consequences with this non-compliance. And if the head's not complying, how much more at the bottom, at the lower end of the department? So it's actually a problem. So the Chair, sorry that I've taken longer. I thought I'd just be one or two questions. But those four issues, for me, I think if we want to really just pull it out, those critical areas, if we could just get information, because then we can be effective, because we're talking about Department Z and Department A, not just general. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Ramadlakane. To add on that, even the financial disclosure is
efficiency is not 100%, then you ask yourself, they are at the top there. Really, what is happening down there? And thank you. Over to you, Mr. Naidu. Thank you very much, Acting Chairperson. Of course, the team will respond to the questions, to all the questions that have been posed. Thank you very much for the questions, but I'll just take a few. The one that relates to the problems that are there in department, I think that one speaks to our intention in briefing the committee. When we brief the committee, we come with detailed reports, we come with fact sheets, and the intention basically is for members to pick up on those issues and make sure that departments do comply. The State of the Public Service report picks on a whole range of reports produced by the Public Service Commission and other institutions, like the Statistics South Africa, for example, the Human Rights Commission. So it picks up on a whole range of reports, but it draws also very, very extensively on the Public Service Commission's own reports. And those individual reports do come with recommendations. I just want to touch upon the very first question, actually, that was raised, or the very first issue that was raised by the acting chairperson, the issue of the fact that the Public Service Commission has not applied the monitoring and evaluation tool at local government. It's a matter that relates to the resources of the commission. We can assure members that with the resources available at the present moment, the Public Service Commission is only able to focus on government departments at national and provincial spheres of government. But we are very aware that the Constitution says the principles apply in all spheres of government as well as in public entities. We acknowledge that, we are aware of that. It just is a matter of resource constraints. We have the expertise in terms of the people that can apply the instrument. The instrument has been tried and tested, but in terms of capacity, we cannot do justice with the instrument if we take on local government as well. We can do a sample, one or two, as a way of starting, but the resources are not allowing us. The other one that I want to touch upon for me, which is the third one, is basically a matter of process. It has been highlighted that members would like to have benefit of the State of the Public Service report. In terms of the Constitution, the Public Service Commission follows a very specific and very expressly stated or prescribed lines of reporting. So the State of the Public Service report is tabled in Parliament, and after tabling, then the Public Service Commission engages other stakeholders on it. So we follow that process, and we are hoping that members will be able to bear with us on that one. But I will also just hand over to the team to take the other questions that have been raised.
No, I just thought I should piggyback on the aspect you talked to Deputy Chair, because I was just whispering to my fellow colleague Justice. He's responsible for dealing with the tabling of reports in Parliament. Lam, can I have a copy of this is the copy we're presenting to the Portfolio Committee. And this report has been tabled in Parliament last year when we released a media statement which usually coincides
with the table of the school. Now, basically, by tabling it, it then says each and every member of parliament, if parliament has 400 members, each and every member of parliament has a copy of this report. So it has been traditional. It has been traditional for all years that when we have agreed that a particular report is going to be tabled in parliament, and with particular reference to a report like SOPS, it would be tabled, and each and every member would have it. If you can go back to a pigeonholes, particularly the last year correspondence, I think you'd find the copy. So it's not necessarily that the presentation we're making. It's a thumbs up. It's basically from that report in essence. Again, that we have done a sampling of few issues on human resource aspects in the local government. Like the deputy chair has talked about that we can't go full swing in local government as a result of the kind of resources we have. Acting chair, the last commissioner of the Western Cape who departed before his contract expired, made a comment that the employees of the Public Service Commission nationally, including all provinces, are not even half equal to the employees of the Auditor General in the Western Cape alone. That then says to you that every work that the Public Service Commission has to do, we have to share it amongst all of these employees who are not even half of the employees of the Auditor General's office in the Western Cape alone. That then says to you that all of the projects that we have to ultimately agree on are dependent on the kind of capacity as Deputy Chair talked to, that we can be able to master. Out. There are quite a number of aspects that Honorable Soka raised, but I would think maybe I should leave it to the DG and DDG to answer, and one would pick those aspects that they would not have answered and come back to. Because the reason why I flagged that report was to indicate that the presentation that we're making is basically a summation of that state of the public service report, would add where few aspects would have been left out. Thank you.
I think maybe if just thinking aloud to make a suggestion in terms of the report, what used to happen in the past is that I think we would provide just over 400, if not 400 copies for the tabling, but there was a new arrangement with Parliament that the number should be reduced to about 100, if not less than 100. For purposes of tabling. So it may be that in that process, this is where this gap came in, that not all members of the committee got copies. And we may have to agree that as we send those that go to Parliament for tabling, that we arrange with the Secretariat for the committee, that there's a certain number as well that then gets provided, because it looks like there is a gap in the process here. But it is the PowerPoint that is presented here is based on the detailed report itself. And I think just also to explain that, as our Deputy Chair has indicated, during the course of the year, the Public Service Commission engages in a range of oversight research work on various aspects relating to implementation of FIRE, implementation of FAJA, citizen satisfaction surveys, inspections of service delivery sites, the handling of grievances, a range of them. And then we have individual reports on these issues. What the State of the Public Service report does is it's really just an overview, and it tries to condense all this information, which is, if you like, a one-stop report on critical trends on public administration. But the details, may I continue? But the details are contained in many of these reports. Let me give you an example. we've talked to this committee before about financial disclosure. And in that process, we provided a detailed presentation and fact sheet, which provides a breakdown by department and so on and so on. Yes, we talked to this committee before about financial misconduct, and there was a detailed report on financial misconduct with breakdown in terms of which departments, compliance rates, and so on. And so the list goes on. But that detail is not contained because in the SOPS report, because what the SOPS report is, it does is really just provide an overview in a condensed fashion. It's not based on our report only. We look at other appropriate reports. For example, Honorable Williams asked the issue about reports to the South African Human Rights Commission. Departments are required to submit annually to the South African Human Rights Commission reports on the requests for access to information that they have received. How many requests did they receive? What were those requests for? And how did they handle those requests? And then we, as in the spirit of partnership, obtain this information from the Human Rights Commission because it's very critical in terms of the implementation of BIA. How are departments handling their requests for access to information? And that's the information we have presented here in terms of that overview, percentage-wise. And the breakdown, obviously, is available in terms of the information provided by the South African Human Rights Commission. So I think where we will need guidance is because the report provides an overview based on a range of other studies that have been done. If honorable members would like us to zoom in on a particular area and provide more detail on that area, then that should be the case so that we can then use the source report that we use to do the source to provide the detail that honorable members require. But in all these areas, there is a set of reports that we have produced that we have used as a basis to develop the report. I think the issue of the 32% for DGs, this is a good example. The study actually of the cluster system was commissioned by the president, and the president said there seems to be a problem with the DG cluster system. Let's get a study done, and they commissioned a unit within the National Treasury, Technical Assistance Unit, to conduct the study. And it's that study that made these findings. And one of the critical things, and we raise it in the report, is that they're saying that it can be assumed that DGs don't find value in the cluster system, that the issues discussed in the cluster system, the way they are run, suggest that it is not good use of their time. That's what the president's report says. And that could explain the 32%. But at the moment, and it's pointed out in the report, there is a process of reviewing the cluster arrangement that the presidency is leading. And it is hoped that that process will then close the gaps that were identified during the review that the presidency commissioned. I also just want to touch on the issues the Honorable Skalvig raised around the round table. Yes, the committee was invited to the rise of the round table, and in fact there was a member who represented the committee at the round table, the Honorable Bigani, who then is not with the committee anymore. Just also to raise a comment on the issue of performance agreements. Having raised this concern in several reports of the Public Service Commission, there is a process now where the minister in the presidency responsible for performance monitoring and evaluation has established a task team, and we have been requested to sit in an advisory capacity in that task team. It consists of the presidency, DPSA, and ourselves in an advisory capacity, where they are reviewing the system because they've seen from the report that the system as it is now is not working. That year in, year out, you have many HODs that qualify to be evaluated that do not get evaluated. And we can't continue with the system as is.
And it is hoped that the kind of input that will be made into this process will revise the system in such a manner that we will begin to see greater levels of compliance in the implementation of the performance management and development system for HODs. Finally, I also just wanted to comment on the issue raised by the Honourable Suga on the gap in years. The reasons are different. If you look at the issues relating to access to water and so basic services and so on, there is because again we relied on the development indicators report that are generated by the presidency, and that was the information that was available at that time. But in other cases, if you look at the evaluation of HODs, for example, the evaluation of HODs is always a year behind. It's always a year behind. Because for the HODs to be evaluated, the annual report of the department must be tabled in Parliament first. So if you consider, let's say, for example, we are now in 2011. Now, for the financial year 2011, the evaluations of HODs can only start after September, August, September, once the annual report has been tabled in Parliament. So when we report in 2012, our report on HOD evaluations will be looking at the 2010-11 financial year. And that's why we in a sense, the year behind in terms of the period that we are reporting on. I just thought I should clarify those few points. Thanks.
Honorable Williams, Honorable Nakem.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think that the Commission must understand that I haven't seen this report that you keep talking about, this 2010 report. And so we were commenting on the report that you've just handed us on these slides. So now you're giving us more detail. What I'd like to know is, in that report that you've got that hard copy there, is the detail that we're looking for in there? Because just to give us 14 pages of slides or whatever it is, 16 pages of slides, doesn't really help us. And also, I think that we've had quite a good relationship with the Commission in this fourth term, and I think that, or in this fourth Parliament, that the way in which you report, you should start knowing that we look for detail in all of our reports. And this sort of like very general stuff doesn't really help us, because we really do need more detail in our reports. So please, in future, can you bear that in mind? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Acting Chairperson. And let me say what other members didn't say. Congratulations for your election as the Acting Chairperson today. It's unfortunate. I think the Public Service Commission will bear with me, because when you tabled the annual report, I was not a member of this committee. So I became part of this committee in November. If you gave them the annual report, so I didn't get it. I think the point for me is that as much as the Public Service Commission has tabled the report, the annual report, in 2010. And what the Commission has done for today is to summarize that report, which is good. But I think the point that has been raised by Honorable Maluleke earlier, what I was expecting is that the Commission will come and say, given the problems that have been identified in the annual report and recommendations, if there were recommendations in that annual report, this is how far we've gone. Because for me, the Commission cannot wait for another annual report now to come and brief the committee on how far has the recommendations which reflected in the previous report have been done. I think if that is not the way of doing things, I think that can assist. You see, I complained. As a result, I've got the report. Thank you very much. So that's one point, Chair. And I think the one other area that I'm interested in, just a brief, is the part where you speak to the expanded public works program, the job opportunities that has been created. If you can, Commission, please. When you look at those job opportunities that have been created, are they sustainable? Those who benefited as a result of those job opportunities, are there skills that you can claim that really these people now, even if those job opportunities are not sustainable, but however, there's something that can make them to be active somewhere else. I'm interested in that. I'm raising this because in the report, you are also making reference to skills development and a number of things. Thank you very much.
Honorable Mutumi.
Thank you, Honorable Esther. I just want to refer to some of the responses that have been raised. And I want to say that some of them are very...
Some of them are very concerning. There was a response that the local government is left out of reckoning because of the lack of resources. I think this is very concerning in view of the fact that it is exactly at local government level where a lot of dissatisfaction is reflected. It is at local government level that the tires are burning and people are up in arms. And therefore, my feeling is that perhaps the prioritization is wrong. My feeling is that that is where the focus should be if there is a lack of resources. Then also, I want to respond to the fact that this is a summary of a full report. And even as a summary, I feel that sometimes it does not give one a full picture. I will just refer to page 12 at the top, where we're talking about the CDWs. The report is somewhat positive. And this is not our experience in this portfolio committee, because during 2009 and 2010, there were task teams that were deployed to the areas where there was a lot of dissatisfaction. And CDWs were interviewed, and without an exception, they reported that they were very unhappy, because there is no coordination between them and the local structures where they are functioning. They do not get any joy from the mayor and the councillors. So one wonders where these positive reports come from. I note that it says that there is a challenge in providing an appropriate institutional environment, but even that needs to be unpacked, because we don't quite understand. The impressions that we got as we're going around and interviewing these CDWs was that they report to another department, but they are working with members of another department. They were either reporting to the GCIS or to the premier of the province, but they were working with the officials of the local government department, and they were really not getting any talk from there. So I just wanted to mention those two and say, to me, these responses are very concerning. Thank you.
I understand the response when they were referring to a document presented, but my main thrust was around the forward-looking on the document in terms of what is presented, the turnaround. And also, you see, maybe unfortunately that an example was made around the water. But the reality of the matter is that there is a gap, 08, 09, and so on. So maybe the choice of the example, to me, because this is a public document, surely it will go under scrutiny, and the person will say, then what happened to other areas of service delivery? Hence, the fall behind to those communities where we come from. And also the recommendations, because I was trying to tap quickly on the document that we are provided, the state of the public service report, in relation to the recommendations as to taking the process forward, because my issue is around the urgency. The urgency in action, in terms of the action plan to deliver on those that have not yet been met. So that was my thrust of the question in terms of this document. Hence our training, and I think it was good for me to ask this question, whether is it an executive or is there a document so that people can refer, you know, as a point of reference. And I think I also help my colleague next to me, because I don't know that he does not have this document. But Chairperson, the reality of the matter, I am trying to say, because we are pressured by time in terms of the execution, implementing our objectives, because they have been developed in this hard copy. And my concern also was around the issue of the senior managers of the various departments, because to them, a treatment should be different from those that are at the lower level. And we can't move at a snail's pace to change or to transform our country if they themselves don't comply. I even mentioned the question of the PFMA, which governs our operations in the various departments. Otherwise, I'm satisfied with the responses. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable William, wait. Okay. Before you, the job access strategy was for people with disabilities. You know, we've been sitting with this, the 2% of people with disabilities since 2005, if I'm not wrong, or even before. And from yourself as Public Service Commission, when you read the job access strategy, do you see it going to assist us in any way, or does it need improvement? Because you have this document and this document, they've shifted the targets, the years now. It's 2014. We are having this job access strategy. By 2014, if we haven't reached that percentage, do you see us moving with the documents that will be produced, or they'll just collect that somewhere in some office? So if you could answer that, we'll come with the last page.
Yes, thanks, Honorable. It's a bit easier when you give honorable members an opportunity and we respond. And it makes it possible that some of the questions don't fall in the cracks. That as honorable members as well can also be patient. That as and when they raise questions, let them wait, let's respond. Because you'd find that there are a lot of questions that have been raised, and a few of them might end up not being answered, because of maybe their enthusiasm to engage with the report, which of course is appreciable. Honorable Msimang talks about a picture of CDW that might then say the SOAP report shows them a rosy picture, whereas their practical experience is somewhat different. If you go to page 42 of the report, it deals with issues on CDW's extensive. And the aspects that you spoke to are basically in the report. If you don't mind, Honorable Chairperson, let me just quote a few aspects that we've been able to pick in relation to what observations we've been able to make with CDW, so that it should not be misconstrued that we tend to be living in a South Africa where honorable members are not there. In page 44, after the table 7, which shows the perceptions of public servants about CDW, there's a paragraph that starts with however. It then says that however, this positive role is mostly at the level of access to services such as ID books, social grants, birth certificates, rather than housing, sanitation, water, electricity, and roads. These are engineering services, and the processes for access to the services are beyond the competencies of CDW. And from there, we're able to list the challenges that are faced with or are faced by CDWs. Among them, we talk about the research which has identified institutional challenges such as lack of a policy on CDWs, which you spoke to. So it does not necessarily paint, of course, the presentation might be different from the content in the report. But basically, this is what I wanted to highlight, to say that these are the other aspects that we picked and we talked to on a very serious note. I think we have done a meta evaluation indirect on extended public works programs. If you can speak to that, because the question that comes, I think, can be answered quite satisfactorily in that fashion. Maybe honorable members must also help us. When we do presentations, what kind of how do you want us to structure presentations? Because there's a difference between what is in the report, detailed as it is, and the presentation that we're going to make to a portfolio committee. So I hear quite a number of honourable members are saying the presentation is not detailed. I think it would be advisable that from now henceforth it can give us a picture of how detailed should our presentations be, vis-a-vis the kind of information that we lift from those reports, because I think it would help. In most cases, you don't also want to rehash a report in itself through a presentation. But if honorable members are saying that the presentations we are making are not as detailed as they want them to be, would appreciate to do that. It's not much of a problem. We have done a report as well on the 2008 report on access to. It was basically on people with disability, and I'm not so sure. Maybe it might be necessary. It also relates to the job access strategy. Maybe it might be necessary that we share the report with the committee, because quite a number of recommendations that were made in that report. The question that comes to mind is how far have portfolio committees of parliament, or how far have institutions that we invited in those hearings, have been able to make with regard to the implementation of the recommendations themselves. The DC spoke about HOD evaluations and the fact that there's a process to review it. But in between now and the reviewal stage of that process, DGs continues to be assessed, and it's not only DGs, also HODs in provinces. And I think Honorable Ramatlagan would be delighted to note that the Western Cape administration is the one that always leads in terms of evaluation of HODs. But I think it also rests with portfolio committees of parliament, that when an HOD or a DG comes to present an annual report, the first question that comes to mind should be, have you signed a performance agreement with the department? Because if you did not sign a performance agreement with the department, there's no basis for you to hear that DG, because basically there's no relationship between him and that which he's presenting.
And I think that should cut across all portfolio committees of Parliament. When the very same DG comes back to come and give a midterm report to the minister, the question that must come from yourself is, has there been a review of the performance of that DG midterm by the minister? And if the minister has not done that, there's no basis for you to hear that minister. And I think those are the powers that vest in you as members of... We can only go as far as pointing out that we have this kind of a problem. But ultimately, the people who have the responsibility to implement, those that would have been able to point out as weaknesses, are members of Parliament. And I think that basically is clear. Let me leave some few questions to other colleagues.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Acting Chairperson. I just want to go back so that we look for possible solutions and areas of improvement. Just to pick up on the question of the quest for detail, and to say, you know, perhaps the members of the portfolio committees must continue highlighting to the Public Service Commission if perhaps there is a need for more information on how departments have complied with PAYA or PAJA, to just say to the Commission, on the basis of the work that you have done, can you please come and give us more detailed information? I think when we look at the SOPs and we there's an outcry for detail in the sense of the public service report. Having explained that we draw from a number of reports, we're not going to be able to solve the problem. What's going to assist us is for members to say we want information on that particular aspect of compliance or whatever the case may be, so that the Public Service Commission can come in and share with members of the committee what is at the disposal of the Commission. And on the question of recommendations, again, the Public Service Commission has got a system where in every report that goes out, and the report goes out with recommendations, the Public Service Commission tracks, you know, records, logs the recommendations and tracks implementation. So we are not in a position to repeat recommendations that already have been captured in other reports. So that's the problem about recommendations here. But I think the way that the state of the public service report has been structured, there is a discussion, and the discussion is based on the theme of integration, coordination, and effectiveness. So we were basically looking at scoping the public service to see what mechanisms are there, what systems are there that facilitate integration, coordination, and effectiveness. We may not have captured other aspects that fall outside of this particular theme. So in terms of the theme, but also in terms of the theme, we do highlight, for example, if you go back to the example about the minimum capacity with the first principle, where the report says you have, there is this in place, there is this in place, there is this in place, but in terms of the work of the coordinating committee, the coordinating committee has not yet been successful in ensuring that a minimum capacity exists in departments. So what the report does, it highlights in terms of coordination, this is in place, this is an area of shortfall. If members need a detailed discussion on that, we can pull on the work that has been done, the report that actually shows this department, there is no capacity, that department, there is. As a matter of fact, the Commission itself has produced a series of ethics, the state of ethics reports in a number of provinces. We can draw from there. So I'm basically saying where there is, I'm sensing an outcry for detail, and I'm saying we can work with that quest for more detail by looking at, by entertaining requests from members of the committee. In terms of prioritization, we have realized that we need to do work on local governments, and we have begun on some projects, you know, to look at issues of recruitment and selection at local government, and we will continue to work. We will continue to work on a basis of sampling until or unless the resource situation changes.
Maybe we should come and brief the portfolio committee, Deputy Chairperson, on the work that we've already done in local government, so that the synergy between what is being said and what we've already done.
Can I just add that I think on an overall general point that there clearly has been a process problem in terms of the distribution of the support. Throughout our engagement with this committee, whenever we come to this committee, copies of the report would have been available. And that's why we then end up having a shortened version through a PowerPoint presentation, because it assumes that the report has been made available. But so I think what we will have to do here amongst ourselves, together with the committee secretariat, we'll have to retrace our steps and just see what happened in this particular case to make sure that we don't have a repeat. Because quite honestly, the assumption was that the report has been made available already, and that therefore what we do is we introduce it in a sense so that the rest of the time can be spent on discussion. But we'll have to retrace our steps there to make sure that this doesn't recur. But just three brief direct questions. One is the issue of the expanded public works, which was raised. That yes, in terms of the evaluation that the Department of Public Works did and in terms of the meta-evaluation that we did ourselves, the issue of skills, people acquiring skills, it's a reality within the Expanded Public Works program that people do acquire the skills, but the sustainability of the jobs is a matter of concern. And that was acknowledged in the evaluation that was commissioned by the Department of Public Works itself. And on the matter of the job access strategy, It is a useful strategy, but you know, strategies and realities, you know, they getting the two to come together is always a challenge. And we said before in our report that you know, policy frameworks and strategy documents, no matter how eloquently they've been crafted, at the end of the day, it's a matter of implementation. There are practical issues that were raised when the Public Service Commission, together with the DPSA, as is in disability, the Association for People with Disabilities, went around conducting hearings with heads of departments and senior managers. Very practical issues that were raised and concerns that were raised around how we can close this gap. At the end of the day is to address those practical issues. You know, for example, it was made clear that departments should, when they do recruitment and selection of people, they should work in close consultation with associations representing, so that this thing that we can't find them cannot be given as an excuse forever. There has been concerns raised by reasonable accommodation in the work environment, because it's one issue to have people recruited and selected and they join the department, but is the environment itself enabling enough to make sure that they can function effectively? Those are the practical issues that need to be addressed. And at the end of the day, I think to the extent to which we will be able to succeed as a public service in this area will depend on how we deal with those specific issues. Finally, just on the issue of local government, what we have done is that we have included work around local government, and honourable members would recall we presented our work plan for 2010-11 to this committee. If you look at that work plan, there are specific initiatives that relate to local government. For example, we are completing a report now on recruitment and selection practices in local government as part of the 2010-11 work plan. And that's just an example. There are a few other projects in that work plan that
that look at the sphere of local government. We will be coming back soon to talk to you about our work plan for 2011-12. And again, there are some projects that relate to the local government sphere. Of course, it is not as in terms of depth. Our focus is likely still on national and provincial government, but there is an attempt to begin to build into our work plan. Even in our analysis, you see from the 2010 State of the Public Service Report that when you talk about issues relating to coding qualification, for example, we try to also say to the Odisha Journal, let's look at the progress at local government level, so that the report also begins to build into its analysis trends at local government level. Thanks, Albert.
Thank you. The last page is Honorable Williams, Honorable Nyakemba.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now that I have a copy of the report, I'd like to refer to page 52, where it talks about the submission of performance agreements by HFDs as of the 26th of February 2010. Now, the detail that I'm looking for isn't so much, for instance, if you look at the table there, it says in 2009 and 10, 47 were received and 26 are outstanding. So that's a rate of 65%. And then on page 53, on the second paragraph, it talks about a large amount of money being spent by the state by people who aren't subject to proper evaluation. The amount of money is 500 billion rand. Now, when I talk about detail, I'd like to know which 26 departments these are, because last year, this portfolio committee had a resolution that all HODs would sign performance management agreements. In fact, we further went on to say that that should go down to management as well in departments. So when we talk about detail, we actually want to know who, not who, or which departments are failing. And also we want to look at trends. For instance, if there's an HOD in public service and administration, let's say, who hasn't signed one last year and hasn't signed one the year before and hasn't, you know, there's a trend like that. We'd like to pick up those trends as well. So the detail we're talking about is we want to know specifics so that we can deal with specific departments, because it's all very well having a figure that 26 HODs have got didn't submit or didn't sign agreements last year, but that doesn't mean anything to us. We don't know which 26 departments that are, and this report doesn't tell us that. So that's the type of detail we're looking for. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think I've helped a lot of people here. In particular, people that I found them in this country. That's 2 points for me. One is the issue of capacity, which makes it difficult for the Public Service Commission to implement its mandate in all these three spheres of government. And I think it is important for the Commission at least to, I know, I've just heard now the gentleman on my far right, but not far right in political terms. on the basis of the sitting arrangement, you will find time to come and make a presentation specifically on the kind of work that you have done in local government. But I think that does not address the capacity challenge that you raised earlier, which I think if is the Public Service Department that does not provide you with personnel which will make you to implement the mandate, I think you need to say that, because this is the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration. So I'm just raising that as a point, but I think if it was raised earlier, I think it is the responsibility of the committee itself to make sure that a follow-up is made with the Department of Public Service and Administration as to why this has not been done up until now. That's the first point, Chair. The second point is the issue that you raised, Chair, and I think there was a response to that in relation to people with disability. I think the point that I want to raise, Chair, is that there are sheltered employment factories that were created after the Second World War. In fact, those were meant for people who have been affected during the course of the Second World War. Those sheltered employment factories exist in seven provinces. In fact, the sheltered employment factories is the public entity within the Department of Labor. So the point I'm raising is, I think it can assist in the process if then the Public Service Commission also, once there are strategies from different departments, but at the same time you work very closely with the Department of Labor in order to see for yourself what is happening there. And if there are recommendations also that you can come up with, then you can assist. I just wanted to raise those two points, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nyagemba. Like you said, it's upon us as the Portfolio Committee to make sure that the Public Service Commission is resourced, not with borrowed staff from the Department of Public Service and Administration, but with their own staff, with their own budget. We are still sitting with the problem of the lapsing of their budget within the Public Service and Administration, of which is a problem we've been dealing with it since last year. So the sooner we deal with that and finish that, so that they should be independent. Independent from the Public Service Administration. Because we can't expect the DG of the Public Service Commission to, he should, like now, go and ask from the acting DG. He's a DG, and you ask from an acting DG from Public Service and Administration for funds. You see the independence there. How independent are you going to be? Because you have to beg from someone. We still have to deal with that. They should have their own budget, like before. And we should see to it that they are resourced, so that they could be able to deal with the matters of local government, because it's where service delivery is. We see protests, we see what in the at the local government level. So Razia will draft a report from all this. We'll come and discuss that report. We make recommendation and we send it to the relevant, to the National Assembly. I think that is where we should move from, so that we should further engage with the issue of their budget, and they should be resourced so that they could be independent.
I agree wholeheartedly through you, Chairperson and Deputy Chair. I agree wholeheartedly with your summation. As processes have already been there to look into the matter. But I think it is also important to hone in this aspect. which aspect is to a large extent a for me and as we've been discussing it in the commission. A problem that leads into how this commission is funded. You see, when you read an annual report of the Department of Transport, they'll tell you we've built a tar road that goes to wherever. You go to Honorable Tokyo Sekgwale's department, they'll tell you we've built houses that you can point out. When you go to the Department of Water Affairs, they'll tell you we've built dams. When you come to the Public Service Commission and the question is asked, what is it that we've been able to do for this financial year? You have produced a report on ethics
or we have dealt with issues of financial disclosure. You can't point ethics. You can't touch ethics. And I think the premise that whoever is responsible for funding institutions like ourselves should be panel beaten. Because you can't come and compare the Public Service Commission with a department that can basically do things that you can point out and see and touch and feel. If you are talking about professional ethics in the public service, you can't point to Honorable Nhlanhla Nene and his minister as to what professional ethics are we talking about. So basically, I think those are the aspects that the committee should be able to sit and say. If you have 9 constitutional principles and values, can you point those principles and values with regard to the attainment, like you can point to a house, like you can point to a tarred road? You can't. So the paradigm shift must be there in pressure in whoever is responsible for the allocation of funding. I just thought I should add that aspect.
Okay. Before you move on, I just want to you know cover the gaps. There was a reference to page 52 of the SOFS report, the question of the filing of PA of performance agreements, and I think also related to that is the question of HOD evaluations. Just very briefly to mention that the Public Service Commission makes accessible to the Portfolio Committee fact sheets. We would produce fact sheets on the filing of performance agreements. We produce fact sheets. As a matter of fact, with respect to HOD evaluations, the cutoff date for the current cycle of evaluation will be 31st July. And after 31st July, the Public Service Commission will be able to say exactly for the year 9-10, this HOD was evaluated, this HOD was not evaluated. So the detail is there, and it can be provided. I just wanted to close that case.
Thank you, Deputy Chairperson of the Public Service Commission. We would really like to thank the Public Service Commission with their report, and also the working relationship that we had last year. I think it will continue this year. We will wait for that report to of local government, whatever they have done. And we will wait also for job access strategy. Whatever you have, you come and present to us. And we will see you when we see you. And to the members of the Portfolio Committee, thank you for the respect that you gave me. I felt comfortable, and I really want to take over from here.